watches I ride in this wind. On my good horse I call you my shiny black bears. To the playhouse of fortune to take the bright silver and gold you have taken from somebody else.
You're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, 88.1 Ithaca Community Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1, KRFP Moscow, Free Radio Olympia, KQRP Salida, WGDR Plainfield, or Free Radio Asheville. This is Unwelcome Guests. I'm Lynn Gary. 1 year ago February, a U.S.-backed coup of former death squad commanders and Haitian business people toppled the popularly elected government in Haiti, and not for the first time. The twice-elected president Jean-Bertrand Aristide and his family were abducted from their residence by U.S. Marines and flown into involuntary exile in Africa. Other elected officials from Aristide's Lavalas party were jailed or killed. Prime Minister Yvonne Neptune has spent over a year in jail, and he is near death as a result of a hunger strike of more than a month. According to recent reports by Amnesty International, the Miami Center for the Study of Human Rights, and the Harvard Law School, the Haitian National Police have been carrying out daily killings and warrantless imprisonment of journalists, human rights activists, and civilians associated with Aristide's Lavalas party. This is but the latest chapter in a very long history of colonialism, racial slavery, and greed. Tonight on the program, a two-hour lecture, Haiti, Fighting Terrorism, Before Napoleon I, Beyond Bush II. Our speaker, Jean Saint-Vie, is an Ottawa-based activist within the Haitian diaspora in Canada. He has been a featured commentator on CBC television and radio. He is also a community radio journalist and author of several books and a founder of the Canada-Haiti Action Network. Mounting evidence indicates that the Canadian government played a prominent role in President Aristide's removal from Haiti. Jean Saint-Vie spoke last month in Halifax, Nova Scotia.
Every time we get an opportunity to talk about what part of the human family is living in Haiti, I consider it to be a privilege because I could have been in Cité Soleil being shot at, just like all these other kids who didn't have the privilege of being plain people as opposed to boat people. The presentation is Haiti Fighting Terrorism, Before Napoleon I, Beyond Bush II. And the title is not to be cute, and it's not to attract attention. It is precisely because people have been fighting terrorism on the American continent before Napoleon and beyond Bush too, I suspect we will be fighting. Haiti is located in the Caribbean Sea. The island is shared by two republics, the Republic of Haiti and the Dominican Republic. But the whole island used to be called Haiti by its original people, who are Taino people. This is one of the groups of people that we have come to call Indians, because Christopher Columbus could not admit that he got lost. And since he decided that he was going to India and he found people there, he decided to call them Indians. But the Taino people lived all the way from Florida to South America. There were 1.5 million of them on the island when Columbus arrived. Just 50 years later, they were looking for Tainos to count. And they basically died because they were enslaved to dig the gold that was under their soil that the Queen of Spain considered to be hers. You see, going into Iraq and finding American oil is not a new thing. People have been finding their property on other people's land for a long time. And the Tainos got massacred, And a priest, Bartolomeo de las Casas, known in the Catholic propaganda as the protector of the Indians, but known to Africans as the person who came up with the idea of replacing the Tainos by Africans captured from the west coast of Africa to replace the Tainos to work the land, because it didn't dawn on them that the Europeans could have worked the land. So starting in 1499, Africans started to arrive on the island of Haiti. Some historians say it's 1503, but it is clear that by the early 1500s, Africans were being herded and dumped on the American continent, especially on this island of Haiti, which was the first area where Christopher Columbus built a settlement. Haiti is a very small place, but it played a very big part in the transatlantic slave trade and also the abolition of racial slavery. Terrorism. We hear some people say that this is a new word, that in fact they're looking for a definition for it. That's crap. African people on this continent know very well what terrorism is. We've been living terrorism for a long time. And even the people who pretend not to know what terrorism is in terms of definition actually arrive at a very clear definition as early as 1937. The League of Nations identified terrorism as criminal acts directed against a state and intended or calculated to create a state of terror in the minds of particular persons or a group of persons or the general public. The picture you see here is not an artist's imagination. That's what used to happen to an African caught learning how to read and write on the slave plantations that existed all over America, not only on the island of Haiti, but in South America and North America as well. This was called a muzzle.
My name is Hampton Hughes. I was born in Charlottesville, Virginia. My grandfather belonged to Thomas Jefferson.
My grandfather belonged to Thomas Jefferson. That is Thomas Jefferson, the President of the United States. I usually add this audio excerpt because there are people who tell you that slavery is such old history. There are some Africans who are hung up on this thing, always talking about slavery. It's not that long ago. This is from the Smithsonian Institute recording. They went in the 40s in the south of the United States to record music. And they found some people who were explaining that they were actual slaves. And this particular person who was a slave is explaining that his grandfather belonged to Thomas Jefferson. And I will make some more comment about that later on. But suffice it to say that the enterprise of racial slavery is directly connected to what's happening today in Haiti. The structures that people are living in Haiti today are structures that came from the colonial period. And the role that the church had played in the slave trade, where you had slave ships named Jesus, Abraham, where the priests were part of the enterprise on Sunday, the only day of rest the Africans had, to teach them that it's actually good for them to be quiet and nice so that they can inherit the kingdom of heaven after they die. If they have been obedient to their master on earth, their master in heaven will be nice to them. The church still, to no small extent, plays that role today in Latin America. Fortunately, we have other people like Leonardo Boff, like Father Romero, who decided to speak someplace else, some kind of other gospel. At the time that I'm talking about in terms of the history of Haiti, you need to also put it into context that all this savagery was taking place at the time of Voltaire, of Molière, of the Renaissance, of all the people who were talking about liberté, égalité, fraternité, brotherhood among the human beings. Slavery was thriving all over, and all the European states were building their riches on the back of Africans. And the dogs that you see in this depiction here, in the particular instance, Rochambeau, Napoleon, sent their general with dogs to be trained in Cuba, and specifically requested that these dogs be sent without food ration so that they can be trained at eating human flesh, particularly African human flesh. And this is the period that when you will read in the history books, they describe as Haiti being the pearl of the islands. Yes, pearl for the 30,000 whites who were living on the island, but hell on earth for each and every African living, dead, and their children to come. As the human spirit never accepts oppression, what had to happen happened, because the arrogance of white supremacy caused these people to become very stupid. Because the life expectancy of an African on the Haitian plantation was 7 years. A young 18-year-old African who landed in Haiti could only expect to live 7 years because of the sheer brutality of the system. And so what that meant was that the Europeans had to go to the west coast of Africa, constantly getting new Africans. And there was a distinction between the Africans who grew up under slavery and never knew anything but slavery, whom they call the Creoles, and the new arrivals, people who came, for instance, from the kingdom of Benin, the kingdom of Dahomey, people who actually lived in very organized societies. Some of them were soldiers. These people, when they landed on the island in such large numbers, a portion of them became maroons. They went to hide into the mountains, and some of the few surviving Tainos helped them know how to survive in the mountains and to organize rebellion. And the type of rebellion they were using was mainly using poison to poison the water sources. And that created a lot of terror in the white community, but it also killed a lot of the Africans. But that was one means for them to not only dream about freedom, but actually to fight to get their freedom. And one particular revolt that stayed in the history annals is in 1791. The evening of 14th to the 15th of August 1791, there was a meeting of leaders of the African communities under the guise of a religious ceremony, because it was only the Sunday that was left for the Africans as a day where they can meet each other. And during that voodoo ceremony, they took the oath that they would, from that day on, rather die than to submit into slavery. And at that oath, the next week, basically plantation after plantation was burning, and it made headlines not only in Haiti, but all over the United States, Britain, because all of these countries had slave plantations nearby. Jamaica was a British slave plantation, Cuba was a Spanish slave plantation, and of course the United States was but a just big slave plantation. The French government realized that the rebellions were becoming more and more frequent, and they were losing a lot of people because the sheer arrogance of white supremacy caused them to put 30,000 whites on the island and 450,000 African slaves. And they had an intermediary class of people that was created on the island called the Affranchis, and most of them were what we call today mulattoes, the children of European men who had raped African women. You understand why I make this precision, because it could not be under these circumstances the children of African men with European women, because it was a situation of power as opposed to love. There may have been some exceptions, such as, for instance, Alexandre Dumas, who is known as a great French general, but also a literary giant with the Three Musketeers, who was a mulatto, and actually he was born out of a situation where the white parent married the African woman, but that was the exception, not the norm. But France decided to declare a pseudo-emancipation in 1793, and what that meant was that the people they used to call slaves will now be called farmers. And the people who used to own slaves will not own slaves anymore, but farmers. And the rule is, if you were a slave, you will not be able to leave the plantation where you used to be a slave for up to a year. And when you do move around, you need to get a pass from the person who used to be your owner. Of course, the Africans weren't stupid. They understood this meant we are still slaves. And the struggle continued, and the plantations continued burning. However, something significant happened starting in 1793. The Africans were not just burning the plantations. There's a man named Toussaint Louverture, who, although he was illiterate, got information, because he was living in the houses with the Europeans, and he informed himself when there was war in Europe between the French, the Spanish, and the British. And of course, it was on the basis of wars happening in Europe that they decided this portion of America is going to belong to the French, this portion is going to be to the British, etc. And at a given time, on the island of Haiti, you had a portion of the island that was French, a portion that was Spanish, and a portion that was British. Toussaint went and offered his services to the British, sorry, to the Spanish. And to the Spanish, he offered to create an African army to defend the Spanish territories. And slowly but surely, he started to grow an African army. And the French were doing the same thing, introducing Africans into their military. And very soon, Toussaint Louverture managed to use the rivalry between the Europeans to switch allegiance whenever it is necessary for him to do so, to go to the French. And by the late 1700s, Toussaint Louverture was governor general of the whole island on behalf of the French, of course. And his goal was to fight for the emancipation of the Africans, but not call for independence. However, in 1801, he drafted a constitution for Saint-Domingue, which is what they had called Haiti at the time. Napoleon Bonaparte, meanwhile, had organized a coup in France in 1799. And he realized that this most prosperous colony of his was being governed by an African who just drafted a constitution. Therefore, you know, his intentions might be to just take this thing for himself and kick the whites out of the island. And Napoleon then sent his brother-in-law, Leclerc, to the island to get rid of this too excited African. And basically gave him the order to cancel the Emancipation Proclamation of 1793. And the first thing they did, they reinstated slavery full-fledged in Guadeloupe and in Martinique. Something significant happened. Africans left Guadeloupe by boat and arrived in Haiti and informed the Haitians that although Napoleon is saying that actually his goal is to put order and get rid of Toussaint, but not to return with full-fledged slavery, this is exactly what he just did in Guadeloupe and Martinique. And so an all-out war took place in Haiti. But 1803 is a very significant year because although Toussaint Louverture was captured in 1802 by trickery, by the year of 1803, the French started to have indication that they might actually lose Haiti because they were losing a lot of soldiers. And because also they were at war with Britain at the time, and Britain occupied Jamaica, it was difficult for the French to send reinforcement to the 60,000 soldiers that they had sent with Leclerc to recapture the island. And so between January and May of 1803, France was negotiating with the United States to sell the Louisiana Territory. And we'll keep that in mind as we move to the next slide. Toussaint was tricked, captured in June 1802, and in fact he died out of starvation in a French jail on April 7th, 1803, not knowing that just a few months later, his former lieutenant, D. Dessalines, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, would actually defeat the army of Napoleon Bonaparte and create the first place on this continent where black person was a human being, the only one. And Jean-Jacques Dessalines represents to Haitian history what Malcolm X represents to American history. He is the African no one wants to talk about. You will hear everybody talking about Toussaint Louverture because Toussaint was negotiating with the Europeans. Dessalines said there's no negotiation to take place. Because Rochambeau threatened him when he arrived with his expedition, because Rochambeau is the guy who replaced Leclerc and came with the dogs, trained specifically to eat Africans. And Rochambeau sent a letter to Dessalines bragging that, "Dessalines, when I capture you, I will not shoot you like a soldier. I will not hang you like a thief. I will beat you like a slave until you die." Lo and behold, Rochambeau, after having bragged so much, on November 18, 1803, he was the one captured by Dessalines. Dessalines did not shoot him like a soldier. He did not hang him like a thief. And he did not beat him like a slave. He simply said to Rochambeau, "Drop your guns, run as you've never run before, get on that boat and get the hell out of this island and never come back." Yet, in the history books, Dessalines is the one who is known as the savage. You can guess who wrote those history books. And so, the only known defeat of Napoleon Bonaparte on American soil was at the hands of Africans. Africans who had nothing left to lose because they weren't fighting for oil, they weren't fighting for prestige, they weren't fighting for land, they were fighting to survive. They had already lost their names. Dessalines wasn't named Dessalines, he didn't know his name because the Europeans forced every African to adopt a white name that they called Christian, because at the time Christian meant white. And this woman, Victoria Montu, is there to remind us that it wasn't just men who were doing the fighting. African women were fighting from the shores of Africa. And sometimes they tell you that it was Wilberforce and Schlossler who declared emancipation. That's not true. Africans are no different than any other people on this planet. They know repression, and when they face repression, they fight it. There were African women who jumped from the boat with their babies and suicided themselves because they didn't accept servitude, because they were in their own land, queens, kings, agriculturalists, engineers, all kinds of stuff, and they did not accept slavery. Victoria Montu is known in our history as a woman who have said to three young women who were being hanged by the French, and these were public happenings, they invited their kids, their babies, and their Bible in their hands when they were going to kill a few white black people. And while they were going to kill these three black women, there was one of them who was crying, who got scared. And this woman looked at her and said, "Rejoice, my dear, for your wombs will not bear slave children." The flag of Haiti is blue and red, and it's not a coincidence. It's because the flag of French is blue, white, and red. And the Haitians, wanting to make clear what they wanted to do, ripped off the white of the flag to say that the tyranny of that island will stop, and it will stop now. And of course, the civilized world responded in kind. As Haiti declared its independence, the French foreign minister wrote to his American cousin that the existence of a Negro people in arms is a horrible spectacle for all white nations. You see, at the time, they didn't talk about visible minorities. These are terminology used afterwards. We were dealing in a world of black republic, white nations, and everybody knew their place. And so the United States responded to the call to white supremacy by banning trade with Haiti in 1806, 1807, and 1809. But you need to understand what that means. Haiti was a slave plantation. that was growing coffee, cocoa, or sugar. You don't eat coffee, cocoa, or sugar. You export that. And the French never built anything in Haiti except for these plantations. So when they imposed this embargo in Haiti, that means all this coffee, cocoa, or sugar means nothing because you cannot sell it to anybody. Because Jamaica is a British slave colony. The United States is a slave colony. There's no other place where you can find a friend. So Haiti was isolated from the birth. But worse than that, Haiti won the war because there was war in Europe. And the French had a difficulty sending a lot of ships to pass in between Jamaica and Haiti to just slaughter the Africans, as it was the plan of Napoleon Bonaparte, who said to his soldiers that there should not be one single man with a black man with a decoration on his shoulders, and that men above a certain age were to all be killed, and sparing only the women and some of the very young children. Basically a genocidal plan. But in 1825, there was the Traité d'Amiens, and there was peace in Europe. And so the French took the opportunity to land in Haiti with 14 warships, with the full support of the United States and Britain, and demanded that Haiti pays a ransom of 150 million francs as reparations because the French slave owners had lost their property. That is my great-great-grandfather and my great-great-grandmother. So Haiti declared its independence and was looking for the complete abolition of racial slavery on this continent. And so when Simon Bolivar, who is known as the liberator of Latin America, landed in Haiti twice, Haiti gave them guns, people, boat, a printing press, and a constitution. And Simon Bolivar was told that the only thing that the Africans of Haiti demand of you is that wherever you go, you abolish slavery. Simon Bolivar went on to stay in history as the liberator of Latin America, but not as the abolitionist of slavery because he didn't keep his word. He freed his own personal slaves, but he didn't abolish slavery because slavery was just too profitable. It was making a whole lot of people rich. In 1825, the French king started collecting that ransom of 150 million francs, but that was just the beginning of it. And to understand what that means, 150 million francs was the annual budget of France at the time. It was 10 years of Haiti's GDP. 150 million francs, when you compare that to what in 1803 they sold Louisiana for, is 10 times the amount. They sold Louisiana to the Americans for 15 million francs. Yet Louisiana at the time was not Louisiana today. Louisiana at the time was half of the United States. 22 times of the whole island of Haiti for 10 times less the money. And of course, it didn't make sense for France to be asking for reparation of any kind because not only they had stolen the land from the first people that were there, they had used Africans for 300 years of free labor, killed these people, massacred them, and had the nerve, with the help of their white supremacist brotherhood, to demand that Haitians pay reparations to them. But France wasn't the only nation that was fighting the Black Republic. The United States intervened more than 19 times just between 1957 and 1900. The Spanish would come all the time saying that Haitians are contaminating the blacks of Cuba, causing them to rise up against slavery. And then they would demand X amount of money or else they blow up the National Palace. The Germans would come every now and again. Because you see, the founder of Haiti, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, was killed just two years after the declaration of Haiti's independence by a coalition of the mulattoes and United States of America and other countries who saw a threat in Dessalines establishing an Afrocentric republic in the middle of their America. And so you had a counter-revolution just 2 years after the revolution. And so European merchants were coming back to Haiti. And so whenever there would be political unrest in terms of conflict between the blacks and the mulattoes, a German merchant would lose some of his merchandise, would call his embassy, and Germany would send their army, and they would point to Haiti's National Palace and demand a 21-gun salute plus X thousands of dollars. This kind of extortion took place throughout Haiti's first 100 years, and just to give you an example what that meant, in August of 1883, diplomatic representatives of France, Britain, Germany, Belgium, Spain, Holland, Norway, and Sweden signed an ultimatum threatening the president of bombarding Haiti's National Palace. This was the reaction of the civilized world to the existence of Haiti. And of course, there are people who say, well, why did these Africans want to have freedom so early? Why couldn't they just wait? Since they were giving freedom right, left, and center to people, right? Well, I always use this slide to answer this question. People put in their minds that slavery is such ancient history that you could not identify a person who actually knew slavery in her lifetime, you know, if it wasn't way back in the 1700s or 1800s at least. Yet Maria do Carmo Jerônimo only died in the year 2000. Not in 1912. In the year 2000, because racial slavery did not get abolished in Brazil until 1871. And she was born, she was born in 1871, sorry. Racial slavery did not get abolished in Brazil until 1888. Same as Cuba. See, it didn't just end because some Christian preacher suddenly told them that Jesus would not condone racial slavery. It just didn't happen like that. It happened because people fought. And as the Africans were fighting, slowly but surely, some whites started to understand that they are being savages. They are losing their own humanity by supporting something so barbaric. And so you had someone like John Brown, who was a white American, who got killed because he was fighting against slavery in the United States. And the United States refused to recognize John Brown as a hero. And the first thing to commemorate John Brown was actually built in Haiti. Haiti built a highway and named it after John Brown, the white American. And in the United States, John Brown had to wait many years until the hypocrites recognized him. So the Americans invaded. And this is what they did. But basically, this is showing the U.S. intervention in 1915. And as you can see from the National Geographic's document there, they said that they were going there to help their black brother put their disorderly house in order. Pretty much, very much what Paul Martin is saying today. The responsibility to protect. You see, the terminology changes, but it's the same crap. The idea that people that are poor have lost part of their brains, and therefore we need to go and teach some sense into them. What you're seeing here is the Haitian president at the time. You can see they were dancing inside, and everybody was light-skinned. That was the mulatto Haitians. And in the streets, the soldiers are black. And that's what the United States accomplished by going to Haiti. They mimic the same system they had in the United States, segregation. In Haiti, instead of the whites, you had the mulattoes, with the kind of ideology that the whiter, the better. And so Haiti would have a string of mulatto presidents from the period of the U.S. occupation of 1915 all the way to 1946. And there were nightclubs, and all kinds of other places, restaurants, areas where black Haitians couldn't go. To understand what that means, when you say black Haitians, it's like you said, I don't know what, humans? Because in Haiti, everybody's black. But there's a group of black people who don't know they're black. They call themselves mulattoes. And so the Europeans convince them that there are different groups of people. They represent only maybe 5% of the population, but the Americans understood the value of using that. And so from 1915 to 1946, only mulattoes ruled Haiti. And you can see how the National Geographic magazine described it. You know, while the peasants took to the bush, the middle and upper class Haitians gravitated to the seacoast, where they learned the art of living by the exploitation, political and commercial, of the unthinking black animals of the interior. And this left us with a legacy of terminology in Haiti of moun en dehors. Moun en dehors means people that are outside. Outside of the reality, outside of the city, outside of politics, outside of anything that has to do with power. And so, you even had a specific birth certificate, step peasant, when you were born as moun en dehors. And the folks who lived in the city had a different kind of birth certificate. And that lasted all the way till the 1990s when President Aristide said, the hell with that, every Haitian have the same birth certificate. And so this illness called racism caused us as a humanity to have some tragic situations. A man named Leonidas Trujillo was so ashamed of the fact that his grandmother was black. He himself, a mulatto, decided to whiten the population of the island and went on a spree of killing that ended up with 30,000 blacks killed on both sides, Haiti and the Dominican Republic. Trujillo was the good friend of D. Roosevelt and a good friend of the Haitian dictator of the time, who was also a mulatto because that was just the period of the Americans, Vincent. And when Trujillo admitted that his army had killed 28,000, he didn't admit the last 2,000, Haitians, they had a meeting of the three of them, and they decided to pay their family less than the price of a pig at a time. And Roosevelt was very proud of his negotiation skills. I will not bore you with Papa Doc, because I'm sure if you haven't heard anything about Haiti, you heard Papa Doc, voodoo, and AIDS. What you don't know about Papa Doc is that he lasted 30 years in power, not because Haitians didn't try to get rid of him, but because the Haitians who tried to get rid of him got killed in New York, in Miami, in Haiti, with the help of the CIA, with the help of the Secret Service. And the famous Tonton Macoutes of Duvalier received specific training from the United States. And when Duvalier died and transferred power visibly to his son, who was a 19-year-old obese boy at the time, we didn't know what the hell was going on in the world, it was the United States who organized the whole thing. The boy didn't even know. He was just a party animal. Party all the time was his song, right? Yet, when you ask people why Haiti is poor today, they say, well, you had a whole bunch of dictators, Duvalier. Yes, it's true. Duvalier was Haitian, but he wasn't our making. He wasn't our choice. When he declared himself president for life in 1963, it was with the full support of the United States of America, which was the most powerful nation in the world, in a rivalry with Russia. And Duvalier offered his services to the Americans to protect the Caribbean from the threat of communism. And it is Duvalier who organized to get Cuba kicked out of the Organization of American States. And if you go in the archives of the United States, you will hear about the most expensive breakfast ever. This is that meeting of the OAS where the U.S. envoy to the OAS had breakfast with the Haitian envoy and was lobbying him to cast the deciding vote against Cuba, because there was a tie at the time and Mexico didn't want to betray Cuba. But Duvalier was all too happy to do that. And once Duvalier did that, every Haitian who was in the opposition knew that you even utter the word, you know, regime change or whatever, they didn't have that word at the time, Duvalier would just kill you, and that would be the end of that. You see, all these dictators that spring up in these impoverished countries don't just get created like that by the society. They get foreign support. And so when you see that a whole bunch of Africans are dying of hunger in a rich place like the Congo, it is not because they don't know how to choose leaders. They didn't choose Mobutu. They chose Patrice Lumumba. The Belgians and the CIA killed Patrice Lumumba, put Mobutu there, and then the hypocrites that they are, a few years later, say, well, Mobutu is a dictator. And when Mobutu is spending his money partying with Jacques Chirac and Mitterrand, nobody hears about it. Except when it's 60 years later, when it's too late. Like today, they're admitting that they were helping Pinochet. Everybody's 90 years old or dead. Doesn't matter. All these Chilean families lost their loved ones. Nobody's going to ask that Margaret Thatcher and Henry Kissinger be arrested for the criminals that they were with Augusto Pinochet. We had a brief period of renaissance in Haiti when Demarcel Estimé, a son of peasant from Verrette, became the president of Haiti. And it's thanks to this man that today you can find a black Haitian and ask him if his father had education, and he can say yes. But if you ask him if his grandmother had an education, he will say no. She didn't even know how to read or write. You can meet a white-looking Haitian or a mulatto Haitian who can have a grandmother who was an intellectual, but never a black one. Because in order to pay the first payment of reparation to the French, Boyer closed all the public schools. And the only people who could go to school were the rich Haitians living in the cities, and they happened to have been the mulattoes. And so Demarcel Estimé started a public school reform, and in 1950 the United States considered him to be a threat. He was overthrown, ended up in Jamaica, like most popular leaders. Daniel Fignolet is another one who was very popular, and he lasted 19 days. And that's when the election took place and Duvalier declared himself president. A whole lot of Haitians who went to Eurocentric school actually believe that people who don't know how to read and write are stupid, as if knowledge only existed in the ability to read and write. And so they're denying the population the right to participate as full citizens in the life of the nation is considered only normal. Just like there are people, if you let them in this country, who actually have the same ideology that you cannot handle the truth. And they, as the adults, will take care of your money for you until you do an investigation and you find out what they were doing with the sponsorship money. It's the same thing all over the world, except that in Haiti, these fools have backing that allow them to carry out their dreams. And so when the population of Haiti chose Jean-Bertrand Aristide as their president in 1990, it was nothing short of a revolution, because it was the first time that the Haitian population itself chose its leadership in the person of the president. And Haitians were not in any illusion that this one man was going to transform a place that has been ruined since the arrival of Columbus into some kind of heaven on earth. But it was their choice. And he was speaking their language, and he was speaking to their needs. And they were empowered by that affirmation. And when Jimmy Carter, who many of you in this room probably still consider to be a Democrat, went to Haiti after the election of Aristide and organized a meeting with Aristide to tell him, please give up your seat and let the American candidate, Marc Bazin, become the president, that will avoid, you know, a bloodbath and whatever. The Haitian people immediately took to the street, screaming, Aristide President, communique, communique, titi President, which means tell the world that Aristide is president, because they sensed that they were about to just steal the election from them, as they did in the Dominican Republic, where they stole the election from Juan Bosch and gave it to Joaquin Balaguer. And yes, Jimmy Carter, the great progressive, was part of that plot in the Dominican Republic as well. And you should do some reading about Jimmy Carter, about what he did with Anastasio Somoza in Nicaragua. And you will understand why our progressive movement have been making mistake after mistakes, because we take at face value those fabricated heroes instead of listening to the people in the country who are living the reality themselves. Aristide was overthrown just 7 months after his election because he actually increased the minimum wage. He decided that Haiti needs to have investment in schooling and not in privatization of the state-owned enterprises. He was talking about a marriage of the population with the army, but the army didn't want any kind of marriage because at the School of Americas, that's not what they taught them. They taught them that their only enemy is the population. And to this day, the so-called Haitian army has never fired a shot against a foreign army. Never. When 30,000 Haitians were massacred by Trujillo, not a shot was fired by the so-called Haitian army. But the Haitian population have been dying. And when this first coup took place, I was in Haiti, because after I wrote my final exam at Waterloo, knowing that there was democracy in my country, I just took my car and drove, picked up a cousin in Montreal, we drove to Miami and we went to Haiti, like a whole bunch of fools who did the same thing like we did. Living Africa, living Europe, living America, and we were all going to Haiti because it was all possible. We were going to transform the nation of our ancestors. It lasted 7 months. Because when Aristide became president, the president of the United States of America was the former director of the very good institution that we know as the CIA. And now it is confirmed that the generals in the so-called Haitian army were card-carrying members of the CIA. We know that for sure because when General Cedras was leaving Haiti, the negotiations that took place included the United States renting his home in Haiti, and to this day, it is the U.S. that sends him his rent money all the way in Panama, where he's living large with the Haitian people's money. Aristide spent 3 years in exile, and there were demonstrations all over the world, not least among them by Randall Robinson, a black activist from the United States who went on a hunger strike, but also because Haitians were leaving Haiti by droves, getting on boats, getting on anything they could put their hands on, and landing in Florida. And as you know, in the brotherhood world that we live, there are certain immigrants that are not really liked. So when they saw all these black people landing in Florida, Bill Clinton wanted to find a solution fast. And his solution was to return President Aristide, but with a few conditions. One, you have to accept that the 3 years you spent in exile count as part of your 5-year mandate. Two, when you go to Haiti, you have to agree to follow the structural adjustment plan, better known as the death plan. To understand what that means, the budget of Haiti works this way. 80% of it comes from the IMF, World Bank, and whatever other hypocritical game that the USAID, CEDA, Alliance Française, or whatever, foreign money. The left, the 20% that comes from Haitian sources, a whole lot of it comes from the telephone company, the electric company that are state-owned, and the ports, etc., the airport. The United States wanted him to privatize the budget that he has, basically saying, you're not a government. Because if he gives up the 20%, what is he governing? So when Aristide went back, he actually started to implement some of these policies. He organized elections. Haitians had no choice but to go to the election, and they voted and they chose a new president. Aristide started to privatize, and the president after him, the cement company. But when they started to talk about the telephone company, the people took to the streets. Because they knew nobody will be employed by the states anymore, because they wouldn't have no money to pay the teachers. They wouldn't have any money to pay the employees. They wouldn't have any money to do anything. And so Aristide stopped, and Préval stopped the privatization plan, and you will see what happened in terms of the foreign aid. The Haitians are illiterate. They are poor, but they are not stupid. They haven't lost some of their brain cells. They have all their chromosomes. So the next time they had an election, they voted for Aristide again, because they realized that their first mandate was stolen from them. And according to the Haitian constitution, Aristide could not have two consecutive terms. So he had to wait for a presidential term by someone else, which was René Préval, who managed, thanks to the Haitian gods, to survive his mandate, because there were all kinds of attempts to overthrow him, because he was Lavalas as well. And they voted for Aristide in 2000. And you will hear all kinds of people telling you that Aristide was a dictator, that's why he was overthrown. Yet, in the Washington Post of February 2nd, 2001, you need to understand that the election took place December 26, 2000. But he took office February 7th, 2001, which is how the system works in Haiti. So this is 5 days before Aristide took office for his second term. We read in the Washington Post that the Haitian opposition, and in the previous paragraph to that, they explain how it's the International Republican Institute that created the 15-party coalition called Convergence Démocratique. People who follow Venezuela recognize this name, because it's the same name they use for the sham thing they created in Venezuela, a Democratica Coordination, la Coordination Democratica, whatever. Total lack of imagination. These people are quoted in the Washington Post saying that their dream, their desire is to see the U.S. military intervene once again, but this time to get rid of Aristide and rebuild the disbanded Haitian army. That would be the cleanest solution, said one. Failing that, the CIA should train and equip Haitian officers exiled in the Dominican Republic so they could stage a comeback themselves. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't think these people are prophets, that they have special connections with Jesus or any other, you know, gods. But they were talking about the coup 3 years before the coup. But that's not the only one. So they did not overthrow Aristide for something that he did, because he didn't do it yet, and they wanted to kill him and get rid of him. You remember in 1805, Prince Charles Talleyrand wrote to his American friend about this black republic, you know, the danger it represents for all white nations. Well, the Franco-American Brotherhood goes a long way, and 2004 was the time for it to come back in a big way again. But it wasn't just the Franco-American Brotherhood. We would be hypocrites to be talking about them and not us here today, because there was a meeting at Meech Lake, right under my nose where I live in Gatineau, called by your minister of La Francophonie at the time, Mr. Denis Paradis. And these adults convened a meeting to discuss the future of Haiti, but there was no representative of the Republic of Haiti at the meeting. That lasted 2 days. And when Michel Vastel broke the story in L'Actualité, the headline was, Aristide must go, but it's not the Haitian opposition asking for it, but foreign ministers at the invitation of Canada. And the conclusions of that document, which you can still see today, was published in L'Actualité of April 2003, but actually came out as early as February. It was Aristide must go, Haiti must be put under UN tutelage, and the Haitian army shall be restored. I don't know about you, but these fools were not prophets either. Yet 1 year before the coup, they were describing exactly what was going to happen and is happening today. And May of that year, 2003, there was a U.S. missionary who was caught with all kinds of guns, including a helicopter, you know, those remote control thing, in a container in Gonaïve, the very city where the first thugs were going to be killing people and start what they called their revolution. You know, no imperialist action never ever takes place without the church. When the first actions were taking place, Bartolomeo de las Casas and the other ones prepared the way to make the people ready to accept the condition. And these guys were in there as well, carrying missionary tools like guns. But the Haitian state released this criminal because they were pressured to do so. But this is what happened financially to Haiti. Look at 1994. It seems like Haiti received a lot of money. But this includes the soldiers that went in Haiti. And of course, these people don't eat the same food that Haitians eat. They don't live in shacks. You see a whole lot of money there. Some money probably went to the Haitian government as well. But look at 1997. As soon as the Haitian state refused to privatize the state-owned enterprises, shut down. And this is not just money of bilateral aid. The United States intervened in the IDB to force a veto over loans that were approved for the Haitian state and to which the Haitian state was paying interest. Because they have a policy where if they promise you a loan, in order for you not to lose that loan, while the process of approval is going on in your parliament and all of these other things, you have to start paying interest. Haiti was paying interest, yet the Americans put a veto saying to the IDB they cannot release those $150 million that was supposed to go to Haiti, budgeted for healthcare and education. So it wasn't just strangulation of the state, it was extortion, because Haiti was financing the World Bank. The poorest country in the hemisphere that these hypocrites like to use as Haiti's last name, because you cannot read an article without seeing Haiti, the poorest nation in the hemisphere. It's like, since Africans are used to people having giving them last names, this must be the last name of Haiti. Here you have people who are pretending to be helping a people and robbing it while smiling. President Aristide put this nail in his own coffin when on April 7th, 2003, like any reasonable human being would agree, he said that France must return the money that it had stolen from Haiti. This is not reparations if you are following the reparations issue. Reparations is about giving to the Africans of today the inheritance that was stolen from them for the 500 years of work of their ancestors. Like any of you here who have access to land and property, it is land and property that your ancestors left for you. The Africans don't have that. When I go to the bank to buy a house, it is based on the work that I have been doing while I was alive. It doesn't include anything that my ancestors left for me as an African. That's what reparations is about. Haiti is also part of the reparations movement. But this is restitution.